Let's call the meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 8 a.m. on Friday, February 8, 2013. We're in Butcher Ridge Room 205. Let the record show we have quorum to do business. Present are Senator Giesel, Vice Chair, Senator Egan, Senator Bishop, Senator Hoffman is excused, and myself, Chairman Machicki. Don't see any other officials here. I'd also like to recognize our committee staff, Christopher DeCrell.
That's correct.
Oh, how about that? All right. Christopher DeCrell and from Senate Records, and Stephanie Gavin with LAO staff. I'd like to remind everyone to please turn off your cell phones. Purpose of our meeting today is the first hearing on Senate Bill 32, sponsored by Senator McGuire, Chickaminnick Lake hydroelectric site. This is our first meeting, and before we begin, I have a couple of housekeeping items. First, this committee is scheduled to meet Tuesdays and Thursdays at 3:30 here in the Butcher Ridge Room. This is a five-member committee. A quorum will consist of three members. The passage of a bill requires three votes. My committee staff for this committee is Lynn Smith, and today's meeting is scheduled for 1 hour. Mr. Brett Huber from Senator McGuire's office is here to present Senate Bill 32. Also to testify will be Elaine Brown, Executive Director, Navista Light and Electric Cooperative, and Christine Klein, Chief Operating Officer, Callista Corporation. We've not yet received the first fiscal note on the bill, and there's an amendment coming that Brett will speak briefly on. We'll take these up at the next meeting, which will be next Tuesday. So, Mr. Huber, if you can join us, introduce yourself for the record, and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Brett Huber, staff to Senator McGuire. Senator McGuire is appreciative of your hearing the bill today, and I'll be brief in an introduction to a bill that I think you see is brief in number of words. As the committee is well aware, Senator McGuire has been a leader in helping to provide affordable alternative energy sources across the state, which is important to all Alaskans. The Senator believes that each region should have the ability to fully assess their resources and plan for their future accordingly. Senate Bill 32 helps to do just that. When the Woodtick-Chick State Park was created in 1978, in accordance with AS 41-21-160 through 167, there were two lakes specifically mentioned in Section 167C that were deemed not to be incompatible with park resources for the purposes of development and operation, not to be incompatible with park purposes for the development of operation of hydroelectric site. Senate Bill 32 seeks to add a lake to that list, Chickaminnick Lake. In 2012, Navista Light and Electric, who's conducted a series of studies on this possible hydro project, were denied a special use permit to finish these studies. The DNR was ready to issue the permit, but were advised by the Department of Law that because these two lakes were specifically mentioned in 167C, that it was deemed to be an exclusive list. Furthermore, because Chickaminnick Lake was not included in 167C, that DNR did not have the legal authority to issue the permit. SB 32 seeks to remove that bar. Mr. Chairman, as you noted, we are working with the Department of Natural Resources Division of Parks on an amendment to the bill that will provide some clarity to their ability to work through the management plan revisions and provide public meetings on this issue. It's not quite ready. We'll provide it to your committee staff as soon as we receive it. You also correctly, Director of Division of Parks, Ben Ellis, I think, is here with us today. If you had specific questions on the amendment or their process, I believe he's prepared to answer them. And also, as you noted, members from NewsIST are prepared to testify. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Huber, was your intention that the Navista folks would give a presentation, or was this for our background information?
Yes, they're prepared to provide testimony and walk through their presentation for the benefit of the committee, sir.
I think that'd be helpful.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Good morning. Please state your name and begin When you're ready.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Elaine Brown, Elaine Samuelson Brown. I was born and raised in Bethel, Alaska. I am a Yupik Eskimo from the Chulalongkorn region. I am the executive director for Navista Light and Power. I believe we do have a presentation. I don't want to blow this thing up anyway. What I would like to state is that Chukumanuk, we think that Chukumanuk is worth looking at as an option to help our community survive and thrive.
Brief at ease, please.
Okay.
Just for the record, we have a presentation before us, and we'll have that available online as well. So, okay, proceed, please.
Navista is looking at Chukumanuk Lake, Western Alaska, Southwest Alaska needs sustainable, affordable energy. And we are looking at Chukumanuk Lake as a power source for about 25 communities within the Chulalongkorn and Bristol Bay region. Chukumanuk Lake has been studied since 1954. There have been several studies since 1954 showing that Chukumanuk Lake has been a lake that is looked at for hydro project. A special use permit was issued in 1982 by DNR, the Division of Parks, number 6700-82-2. Giving HARZA authority to go into the park and do some geotechnical, geophysical. We do have that. A copy of the report that was issued. This past year, in 2012, Navista was denied our special use permit. SB 32 would allow Navista to study the lake's potential for hydroelectricity. This would allow us to go into the park and do our geotechnical, geophysical to determine if this project is even a viable project. We are just getting started with this, with these studies of this hydro project. Our goal is to determine if Chukumanuk Lake is feasible and a good fit for Southwest Alaska, both in the Bristol Bay regions and the Chulalongkorn region. Like I said earlier, this would potentially bring power to 25 plus communities on both sides of the mountains. Approval of SB 32 offers a sensible way to allow studies to be completed. We would be able to conduct some field studies and analysis of this project's feasibility, because currently there has not been any information. We did go into the field this past summer and do data gathering. There was a lot of gaping holes of information missing. We're looking at going into the field season of 2013 to continue to do some more studies. Without SB 32, we would not be allowed to go in and do our geotechnical or geophysical, which would determine whether this project is a viable, feasible project. We would continue to work with the communities on both sides of the mountains to address all of the issues concerning salmon, hunting, cultural, socioeconomics, and so on. This is a FERC process that we will have to go through. We will be filing our notice of intent and our preliminary application document later this spring, which would start the FERC process, the ILP process, which would engage all of the agencies, so that we could continue to do studies. They would come up with their study plans, and over the next 2 or 3 years, continue to study this process. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions? Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Brown, I get confused about incompatible use, compatible use. It seems like we're hearing both sides. And even on, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, slide 4, mm-hmm. You say previous geotechnical work was authorized by an incompatible use permit. Okay, so if it's an incompatible use, why did they issue a permit? And then they denied that use permit. I'm confused. Could you help explain that?
Well, DNR this past year was working with us, and they were willing to issue the special use permit so that we could go into the field and do the studies. The Attorney General's office, being cautious due to the wording in the Wood Tick Chick Management Plan stating that this was an incompatible use, took the stance, and we were denied the permit on that wording. If this is changed so that it becomes a compatible project, like Lake Elva and Grant, this would allow us to go into the field and do studies. The whole process is a 20-year process, and this doesn't open it up for anything else, but just us being able to prove that this is a viable project or a not viable project to move forth.
Great. Thank you very much.
Other questions? And my only question is, the paperwork says that there are not salmon in Chicoutimi Lake.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. There are char and there are lake trout, and they're small. So that means that they're landlocked.
Mm-hmm.
But there are no salmon that go up to Chicoutimi Lake.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Excuse
Senator.
Me. Did I understand that there's three sets of rapids prior to getting to the top of the lake? Is that right?
Yes.
And
yes.
That's the driver for why there's no salmon in the lake.
I believe so, but that's one of the things that we are going to be looking at this summer. We're going to be tagging fish or microchipping fish in the lake and down below in the previous lakes and possibly even down in the Nooshigak River, to see where the fish migrate to. And there are three sets of rapids, and we need to prove that it's either the rapids that is stopping the salmon or other fish going up into Chicoutimi, or if it's the cold temperature in the lake, or the water coming down, or the speed of the river. You know, we're not quite sure what the reason is for salmon not making it up to Chicoutimi Lake.
Okay, one more follow-up, if I may.
Sure.
You introduced yourself as Elaine Samuelson, mm-hmm. Brown?
Yes.
Do you know Mo Samuelson?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
He's a cousin of mine.
He's a good friend of mine and former boat racing competitor, mm-hmm. So.
Yep.
Slow Mo.
Any other questions, Senator Bishop? Okay, any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Brown and Ms. Klein. We will now move to public testimony. Oh, yes.
I'm actually with Chalista, and we do plan to testify.
Oh, okay. Very good. Well,
represent a different organization.
Sure. Well, feel free to
okay,
do that.
Please.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood. We have a presentation here, or...
No, I just wanted to testify on behalf of Chalista Corporation.
Okay.
The for-profit Alaska Native Regional Corporation for this region. Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity. As mentioned earlier, I'm Christine Klein. I am the Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer for our Alaska Native Regional Corporation that represents this region. I am also a lifelong Alaskan raised near the village of Loring, down here in southeast Alaska, where hydropower has been in place for 104 years. So I come from an area that has been blessed with great resources and low-cost energy. Our corporation represents the 56 villages and 13,000 original Native peoples in western Alaska. It's a 59,000 square mile area. It is largely low, flat, wet area with the Yukon-Kuskokwim River Delta. So there's very little elevation change except in this one area. The entire region and people have existed for thousands of years in the subsistence lifestyle prior to the establishment of statehood, parks, and refuges. And what I wanted to point out is that these 56 villages and communities on this particular side of this area are completely surrounded by parks, refuges, state parks, and federal parks that are all highly restrictive. There is no private land other than the native allotments and village corporation lands. There's also little infrastructure. There are no roads or access to many of these villages other than by aircraft or barge in summer. This basically means that fuel has to be brought in once a year by barge, which sets the rate for an entire year. The cost of energy is five times that national average. Homes are heated and powered by diesel that is now costing $6 to $10 a gallon. And this is just simply unsustainable, like many areas of our rural areas of our state. There are little, few jobs, economy, or infrastructure to help improve the situation. And so one of the things that we have looked at, really, over the last 40 years of this corporation's history, are what are some solutions. And this one has always been on the table, based on the reports that I've looked at, as a person who has been trained as an engineer as well as an environmental scientist. And this lake keeps coming up since 1954 and is shown by engineers that it is highly likely that it will be a feasible hydropower option. Over 50 villages and tribes met in the Chulista region on March 7, 2011, and I witnessed this because I was there facilitating the meeting. I had never seen this many villages and tribes ever agree on anything in this region in the 20 years I've worked in that area. And so it was really amazing. It was a milestone in history. And they looked at the three last remaining options of lakes and rivers that were had been deemed potentially feasible by reports done by the AEA and other engineers. And they gave us direction and directed us not just to proceed, but to please proceed quickly to look at the Chicoominic Lake option. The other options were the Kisralik River and the Kisralik Lake. Unfortunately, those water bodies have salmon, and they are also not year-round flow, which would enable year-round, potentially, energy generation. So at that point, we went to the legislature and got an appropriation of funding, thank you very much for that, to help oversee and ensure that field work, objective, scientific, factual field work, was gathered and assessed on this particular lake to definitively determine its generation capabilities based on objective science. Chulista Corporation supports Senate Bill 32 and any amendments that would add Chicoominic Lake to the existing list of lakes that are already in Woodchick Park that can and are being considered for hydropower generation. It is one of the only remaining lakes and options in western region of Alaska that has the year-round flow necessary for power generation and where it's probably most needed in this state. More importantly, it has no salmon, and that has been documented by numerous reports, which is extremely important to the people of this region and will stop any project. It has been repeatedly listed in over 17 engineering reports that I have reviewed since 1954, and it could significantly reduce the cost of energy and help reduce the number of high-cost subsidies that we have to continually put towards PCE. It would also help address a large part of the state. Over 20,000 people live in this region, and this is the only rural part of Alaska that is growing in population. As one of the only growing businesses and regional corporations in the region, we respectfully request that you consider this bill and move it ahead. Thank you for your time. Koyana Gunalchish.
Thank you, Ms. Klein. Questions for Ms. Klein? Thank you very much. That brings us to public testimony, and for the record, I just want to mention that we have received several letters in support. Letter from Ms. Coolidge, Mr. Hoffman, Ms. Graham, Mr. Williams, Ms. Epchuk, in opposition from Ms. Alutzik. Mr. Lysak, Mr. Dunaway, and those letters have been given to committee members and are available publicly if so desired. We're going to begin public testimony. We have a list of folks here. For folks here in Juneau, you will have 3 minutes to testify, and the first on the list Mr. Angst, you may help me with the last name. Are you a physician?
I am not.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for having me here, Chairman and committee members. I'm disappointed Senator Hoffman's not here. I'm from Bethel. I was born and raised there. My name is Andrew Angstman. I was born and raised in Bethel. I went to high school there, much like Senator Hoffman. I'm extremely familiar with the area. I've used Woodtickchick State Park for a lot of things over the years. I killed my first moose there. I've flown in the area and fished there and camped there my entire life. And I'm speaking today in opposition to Senate Bill 32. There's two issues at hand that I see. Number one, the bill as written, while it's been said by New Vista and Chilista that the purpose of the bill is to allow feasibility studies to take place, the language of the bill indicates otherwise. And the language of the bill is very clear, it's very short, and it basically says that the development of and operation of a hydroelectric project at Chicoutimi Lake is not incompatible with the park management plan. Nowhere in there is there specific language saying allowing feasibility studies for a hydroelectric project at Chicoutimi Lake is not incompatible. So I'd like to see the amendments that they're going to make and see what kind of changes that brings to the bill itself. But as it stands, the legislature in passing this potentially would be condoning the whole process because it's in the language. Now, there will be other things happening down the line, but from the outset, this is allowing, in the legislature's mind, this to go forward. So let's make that very clear. The language is not mixed or nebulous. It's right there in Senate Bill 32. I'd like to talk a little bit about the issue that everyone seems to be bringing up on the pro side, which is no salmon reach Chicoutimi Lake. That's exactly right. The rapids are huge. I've seen them. I've walked down there and checked it out. I've fished at the foot of the rapids. There are actually large lake trout and char in Chicoutimi Lake. Maybe the people that were doing studies last year only caught small ones, but people in Bethel have caught 30 and 40 pound lake trout in Chicoutimi Lake. The issue that I'm very concerned about is that the studies that New Vista is proposing, and I've seen the maps of where they want to actually do their raptor surveys and their fishery studies, only extend downstream into the first lake, Shakaktuli Lake, which is the next lake down in the chain. The lower Allen River, Shakaktuli Lake, Noyakuk Lake, Tikchik Lake, and the Noyakuk River out to the Nushagak River is some of the best salmon habitat in western Alaska. I would suggest that the impact, direct impact on salmon spawning grounds from this project is far greater than the direct impact on salmon spawning grounds from the Pebble Mine. And you can find that out without doing seismic surveys, without doing helicopter surveys. People can actually fly in a float plane and see that. So That's, to me, the most concerning part. This would have a huge impact on salmon spawning grounds downstream of the dam, regardless of what actually gets through those rapids to Chicamac Lake. So thank you very much. Do you guys have any questions for me?
Yes, Senator Egan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So are you saying that your boss is opposed to Senate Bill 32 in its current form?
I am not here representing any organization whatsoever. I'm here of my own accord. I took the day off from work. I work for Ryanair in Anchorage. I'm the director of safety, and I put in vacation time to come down here and speak at this hearing. So I'm representing myself only.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Next is Ben Kuntz. It's the this is the only indication we have of a last name, so.
Good morning. My name is Ben Kuntz. I'm also here representing myself. I live in Bethel. I've lived there for over 10 years. I just want to speak briefly in opposition to the bill. The Wood-Tikchik State Park is probably not just the nicest state park in Alaska. It's probably the crown jewel of the state park system in the country. And Chicamac Lake is kind of the nicest lake in the park in that it's been set aside under the park management plan as a place where you can't even run a boat with a motor. So I just think that there's a reason that Lakes Elva and Grant were included in the original management plan as being options for hydropower, and that they're closer to Dillingham and makes sense. I don't think Chicamac Lake makes sense as a hydro option, although I do support hydropower. But I think by the time this project would pay for itself, the park would have to be deciding whether people can visit Chicamac Lake in flying cars. So I don't think the project makes sense. And I don't think this bill makes sense. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Any questions for Mr. Kuntz?
I have one.
Senator Bishop?
Maybe I missed it, but what do you do for a living?
I'm not here representing my work, but I'm an English professor at the Kuskokwim campus in Bethel.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Ms. Smith? Check to know, I believe. Carolyn Smith, okay. And Christine Klein, Elaine Brown. Okay. Okay, so that's everyone here locally, and then are we ready for folks on the line?
Yes.
Okay, first is Myron Angstman from Bethel. Myron, if you can please state your name and affiliation, you've got 3 minutes.
Myron Inks, but I represent myself here. I am related to your first speaker there. My son Andy's in the room. I've lived and worked in Bethel for almost 40 years, and I've recreated in the Wood-Tikchik Park most of that time. I'm very familiar with the area. My concerns are fairly brief, and I'll mention them quickly in order. First of all, for the legislature to simply declare that the this project is compatible with the park goals is simply not true. I mean, you can say that it's compatible, but if you look at the park rules, it's clearly not compatible. Chicamac is the most protected lake in the state of Alaska, and the legislature would just simply be changing that rule. The project was created by a political deal. The money that was appropriated to study this project was appropriated as part of the Susitna project as a means of securing support of rural areas for the Susitna project by giving a whole bunch of money to rural areas to do what they wanted to do with in terms of the Chicamac project. There was really no groundswell of support for this. In fact, the local area here turned down the prospect of a dam on this side of the mountains because it would be too harmful to the environment. But as long as it's on the other side, it seemed like it was a good idea. When asked, any person in any village in this area would say, sure, I'd like cheaper power. But the folks that are promoting this project will not directly look at you and say there's going to be cheaper power as a result of this. The power that's going to be generated by this is going to come at an immense cost to the state of Alaska. And that same money could be spent on wind power that would be generating electricity today. If this $10 million of steady money had been generating electricity through wind power in the meantime, already we would have a benefit from that $10 million instead of perhaps 20 years down the road. I was amused by the visit New Vista made to our community a year ago. I spoke strongly against the dam, and one of the ladies that was here with New Vista, I won't identify her because she'll lose her job, leaned over to me after I spoke and she said, I agree with you 100%, but my job doesn't allow me to say that. And there are a lot of people in this community, in the Dillingham area, and working for various organizations in this area that are exactly in that position. They have been put in a position where they must support this project, even though they personally do not. If you can invade Woodchick-Chick Park for this project, you can invade any park in the state of Alaska for any project that comes along. There's a lot of mines that would be built in Woodchick-Chick if they were allowed. And the same applies to parks everywhere in the state, Juneau, Anchorage. There are places that are set aside, and they're set aside for a reason, to prevent development.
Mr. Angstman,
gonna
have to complete your sentence. You're a little bit over there, sir.
Thank you.
That was efficient. Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Angstman? Okay, thank you, sir. Next on the list is Grant Fairbanks from Bethel. Mr. Fairbanks, if you can please state your name and affiliation, you have 3 minutes.
My name is Grant Fairbanks. I live in Bethel, and I'm here as a private citizen. Most of the people in Alaska, and for that matter in our country, that are opposed to Senate Bill 32 and its support for the Chicoutimi Lake Hydro Project do so because this most pristine lake and ecosystem in the Woodchick-Chick State Park is undermined by Electrical Corporation's proposed hydroelectric project, a corporation that to date hasn't done a single project in our state. They know that state law prohibits outboard generators, helicopters, airboats, and other activities on this lake due to its classification as a wilderness area. This wilderness area, by state classification statute, proclaims that this lake and its watershed should have no man-made conveniences within its legal boundaries. Everyone abides by these regulations that want to visit this lake. But now a new energy corporation has asked an out-of-area legislator to have the state statutes changed so they can build a dam and 120-mile transmission line to Bethel. Senate Bill 32 states that this proposed hydroelectric project is a compatible use in a state park. I feel someone hasn't checked the meaning of wilderness or compatible use. This proposed hydroelectric project, with its employee housing, airstrip, helicopter pad, and associated structures, is no more compatible than wilderness camping, fishing, and recreation area, as a rock concert is compatible in the hospital nursery. I'm here because there is no economic justification for this project. This new electrical company, New Vista Power and Light, wants to spend state, federal monies and bonding to the tune of more than $640 million, not including a distribution network to the 14 villages, for the benefit of less than 2,930 households in Southwest Alaska. Per household cost would be $218,430, and this still doesn't cover the cost of the power line distribution system to the 13 villages. A fraction of this cost would power all these homes with on-site renewable energy products and provides jobs and save everyone hundreds of millions of dollars. As a comparison, the proposed Susitna Hydro project will cost about $30,000 per household if all rail belt homes are supplied from this project. An unbiased economist would advise against this project. In fact, a good cost-benefit analysis researcher would have a great laugh and wonder how this even got past the ink on a napkin discussion. In fact, the last page of the March 2011 MWH feasibility study for this project stated that the diesel-only future has the lowest net present value from an economic viewpoint. Granted, fuel prices will rise, but never enough to rationalize this project. It sounds like my time is up. I had more to say, but basically, economics does not warrant this project at all. At the cost of $218,430 per household. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fairbanks. Any questions? No questions from committee members. Thanks, Mr. Fairbanks. Next is Robert Nick. Are you there, Robert? If you can please state your name and affiliation.
Good morning. My name is Robert Nick, a resident of Nunapichuk, Alaska. I'm here testifying on my behalf as a resident of the region, of the village, the Native Village. Thank you for allowing me an opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 32. First of all, I am a stakeholder of the proposed hydroelectric project development and operation at the Allen River outfall at Chicoutimi Lake, a lake in the Kilbuck Mountains within the Wood-Tixic State Park. This project will be an alternative energy plan for Western Alaska villages in the Kuskokwim Valley, Southern Bay villages of Eek and Quillaha, and including the three tundra villages of Nunapichuk, Kasigaluk, and Akmalsok. Kasigaluk has now termed as Akula and Akiuk, so that makes it a total of 14 villages at the onset. In my half a century of involvement in the AVCP Talista region, economic development, education enhancement, and health improvement to improve the livelihood of all its residents, I have not seen more an active involvement of the stakeholders of the residents and village entities participating in the comprehensive planning process for the hydroelectric potential to alleviate the hardship caused by the high cost of energy. Hear me. Living in a village with today's high cost of goods, high cost of transportation, high cost of heating, and high cost of electricity, to say it very simply, is causing insurmountable hardship to young families and single parents trying to raise the future generation, and to our elders who are on fixed major incomes or some that simply have no income. I am in total support of Senate Bill number 32, which will evaluate the feasibility of the proposed project, and I repeat, evaluate the feasibility of the proposed project, allow geologic work and study seismic lines, and allow geotechnical drilling. Thank you very much.
Impeccable timing, Mr. Nick. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next on the list is Mr. Tim Troll from Anchorage. Mr. Troll.
Hello, my name is Tim Troll. I'm a 33-year resident of Alaska. I've lived many years both in the YK Delta and in Bristol Bay. I'm now the executive director of the Bristol Bay Heritage Land Trust, an organization fostered by Chogan Limited, the Native Village Corporation for Dillingham. That was in 2000. It was the first and is still the only land trust established in rural Alaska. I've been the executive director for the last 8 years, and before that I served on the board. The Bristol Bay Heritage Land Trust has a vested interest in preserving the mission of the Wood-Tick-Tick State Park. In fact, people from that region requested that this park be created. One of those people was our distinguished elder, Harvey Samuelson, many years ago. And that mission is to protect the area's fish and wildlife breeding and support systems and to preserve the continued use of the area for subsistence and recreational activities. In fact, over the last decade, the Land Trust and the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation have worked together on several projects to preserve that mission. Since its formation, the Land Trust and its partner conservation organization have raised millions of dollars to assist the division in its efforts to protect the integrity of the park. We have done so primarily by acquiring fee and conservation easements on private land in holdings within the park, and in most cases, turning these properties over to the state ownership at no cost to the state. The Land Trust continues to own one parcel in the park and holds conservation easements on two others. One of those is Harvey Samuelson's old allotment. It also jointly holds with the state a conservation easement on 21,000 acres along the Ogulewak River and the eastern shore of Lake Nurka. The Land Trust and the Conservation Fund spent seven years putting together $10 million to purchase the easement from the Electinget Native Corporation and the subsurface rights from Bristol Bay Native Corporation. Again, all of this at no cost to the state. We continue to maintain a stewardship fund for this property and for our other properties in the park. A particular focus of our cooperative efforts with the state has been to acquire, secure conservation easements on small parcels of property that, if developed, could impact a large area in the park. Several years ago, the only private parcel on Chicoutimi Lake became available. The parcel sits at the outlet of the lake where the preliminary studies cite the hydroelectric dam. The native owner who sold the property wanted to see it preserved in its natural state. Acquiring the only in-holding on Chicoutimi Lake provided conservation protection for the entire lake. The Nature Conservancy, at our urging, purchased the property using funds it raised from private donors. The Nature Conservancy has now transferred this property to the Land Trust for stewardship and protection. The Land Trust's moral obligation is to steward properties we have conserved inside the park, which means we must also protect the purposes for which the properties were acquired. All of our properties were acquired to perpetuate the mission of the park. The foundations, agencies, individuals, and business owners who gave us money for acquisitions did so in the belief that the state park was a permanent creation and their donations would have lasting value. This bill essentially negates their generosity by changing the rules, amending the enabling legislation of the park to allow a project that is speculative at best will likely make raising money for future conservation in the park difficult. It will certainly dampen our desire to continue acting as a fundraising ambassador for the park. We cannot work with integrity in an atmosphere where funders doubt the resolve of the state to maintain the values of the Wood-Tick-Tick State Park, or perhaps any state park. This bill should also be rejected because, despite what you may have been told, it is not uncontroversial. It pits one region of the state against another. It is fostering discord between the Chalista region and the Bristol Bay region, where none need exist because this project is not grounded in reality.
Mr. Troll?
False hopes for great energy savings that will not materialize.
Mr. Troll? Mr. Troll? Sir? If you can wrap up that sentence, you're a little bit over 3 minutes. Thank you.
My last sentence was basically the people in Bristol Bay are not asking for this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Troll. Any questions? Okay, next is Michael Williams from Akiak.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. If you can state your name and affiliation, you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Yes, my name is Michael Williams. I am a lifelong UPAC resident of Akiak, Alaska, and I'm here representing myself and also my tribe. And I am in full support of Senate Bill 32 because we need to take a look at Chicoutimi Lake for possible alternative energy to our villages in western Alaska. And, you know, I had many hours of discussions with our Yupik elders, Frankie Mantle, senior, who is passed on, and Joshua Phillip, and others that resided in the mountains, living in Chikuminuk, Upnuk, and Nishluk, and our people lived mostly up in the mountains, and also around Kizaralik Lake, and those are that's our survival area as Yupik people from our village. And we discussed this issue for many hours, and in conclusion, their recommendation for alternative energy was to, you know, to not support the Kizaralik Lake hydro possibility, but when they looked at the other alternatives, the elders suggested in support of Chikumluk Lake because of the least impact on salmon and etc. So I just really appreciate the wisdom and the knowledge that my grandma had, because they lived up there. I have a lot of relatives in Nushigak River. Galiganuk is our original name, not Akiak, but Galiganuk is, I have a lot of relatives there because we lived in those mountains in Tikchuk Lake area, and also that area. But I would like to lend my support for Senate Bill 32 because we cannot sustain ourselves in the villages with fossil fuels anymore. So we've got to take a look at biomass. We've got to take a look at wind, and the wind is also being checked over. So that's my comments. 3 minutes.
Very good, Mr. Williams. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Williams? Thank you, sir. Next on the list is Mr. Ron Hoffman from Bethel. Mr. Hoffman, if you can state your name and affiliation, you have 3 minutes.
Good morning. Ron Hoffman with ABCP Housing Authority. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to testify on this particular Senate bill. And I just want to express my appreciation to Senator Lisa McGuire for sponsoring this particular bill. I'm just going to go right to take some comments off my testimony, and you know, I am asking the committee to recommend approval for this Senate Bill 32, so that this project can move forward. I have attached to my testimony information in regards to the kilowatt per hour in comparison to Anchorage. I just want to go ahead and reiterate that the cost per kilowatt hour in Anchorage is roughly 0.1274, and in Tuksuk Bay is 0.4490. A difference is of 352%. Let's take a look at Kasigaluk. The cost per kilowatt hour is 0.4798, and this is a difference of 376%. In respect to Bethel, the cost per kilowatt is 0.4892, and is roughly 383% more than Anchorage. You know, it's no secret, you know, high cost of energy is impacting all of service organizations and families, especially the families. And we respectfully request the committee, you know, move this Senate bill forward so that we could explore this particular area. You know, lowering energy costs is critical to the state of Alaska and its residents as well, to the survival of its rural communities. I thank the committee, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Questions?
Yes.
Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ron, when you gave those numbers, does that include the differential from PCE?
We just got the information directly from AVAC, and I'm sure I wouldn't be able to answer that. Then we got the Chugat, the information from Anchorage, from Chugat Electrical Association.
Okay, thank you very much. We can check it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes, sure.
Next on the list, Mr. Guy is listen only. Dan Dunaway, Dillingham. Mr. Dunaway, if you can state your name and affiliation, you've got 3 minutes.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Chair and the committee. Thanks for taking the time to hear me. I'm Dan Dunaway. I have no affiliation other than speaking for myself. I am a lifelong Alaskan, and I've been living in Southwest Alaska since 1978 in various communities, and a resident of Dillingham since 1989. Regarding several people's contention that SB 32 would only allow a study, I think is a highly inaccurate statement. If your intention is to allow a study, then that should be the language. I think to follow along on the existing language of SB 32 opens the door to too much at this time. Regarding Elba and Grant Lakes in the park, they were grandfathered in. It's my understanding that at the time of park formation, Dillingham and the Nooshigak area was looking at these lakes for hydro development and asked to keep those options open. The local electric cooperative has been looking at them, and so far, to my understanding, they are extremely marginal. And one of the biggest obstacles is just the cost of the power lines alone. In addition, a lot of the local people, even though we recognize we have a crushing need for affordable power, we are also uncomfortable in compromising the park. Again, if your intent is to allow a study, I'm sure there's other language that could do that without compromising the integrity of the park. I won't go on. I'm kind of skimming off a letter. I've sent you several things. I emailed last night copies of the letter where DNR rejected the permit request. Request you look at that. To end, though, this park was also partly formed at the request of Jay Hammond, and I can't imagine any elected official today would want to be part of dismantling the nation's largest state park that was created by local demand. Last, hydroelectric dams can have major negative environmental impacts downstream. And granted, salmon don't go into the lake, but hydroelectric dams can affect temperature regime, flow regime, water chemistry, dissolved oxygen problems, and we are very concerned about the spawning habitat downstream, and this could be a major disruption. Also, where they've had a small hydro dam over near Iliamna, it has been far more expensive than they expected because of problems with ice in the winter. And thank you for my giving me the time.
Thank you, Mr. Dunaway. Questions? Okay, thank you, sir. Next on the list is Paul Liedberg from Dillingham. Paul, if you can state your name and affiliation, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Paul Liedberg, and I'm here to state my opposition to Senate Bill 32. I'm a 9-year resident of Dillingham, and prior to that, I lived in Bethel for 8 years. I recently retired as the manager of the Togiak National Wildlife Refuge, and in this position, I work closely with managers of the Wood-Tik-Chick State Park to share resources and unify management practices where we could. Currently sit on the Dillingham City Council, and I've been on the Dillingham Planning Commission for about 6 years, but my comments reflect my personal views, and I'm representing myself. I have several points to make. First, the Wood-Tik-Chick State Park is in the backyard of both Dillingham and the city of Aleutnagik. Virtually all the commercial activities, such as air taxis, guides, lodges, and so on, that take place in the park or support that commercial activity are based in Dillingham. When the Park Management Council met last spring in Dillingham to discuss the requested permit that you've heard about, there was overwhelming opposition from Dillingham residents and commercial operators, and I don't believe that opposition has changed. Second, the document prepared by NuVista for the legislature in 2011 stated that power from this project would be supplied to Bethel and 13 villages for a rate of from 58 cents to 70 cents per kilowatt hour. I'm not an economist or energy analyst, but I don't believe an investment of well over $500 million to produce electricity for Bethel and 13 other villages selling for 58 to 70 cents a kilowatt hour is a wise investment in the scheme of our statewide energy policy. As you've heard, the Bristol Bay Land Heritage Land Trust has worked closely with the state in protecting private lands, and this legislation would undermine not only the work they have done and the money they've expended, but also compromise their future efforts to support the park. Fourth, there's been discussion that Senate Bill 32 as written would not authorize actual construction of a dam and associated facilities. This is not correct. I would encourage the committee to seek legal analysis of this point so we're clear about the impact and intent of the bill before committee action moves forward. Lastly, two other issues complicate the actual development. You've heard about the private parcel that's located at the proposed dam site. Another one is a transmission line that would move the electricity from Chicoutimi Lake to the Kuskokwim, which would need to cross the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge. Title 11 of ANILCA provides for those utility corridors, but it would involve high levels of scrutiny with no assurance of approval. In summary, I understand the need to find wise ways to provide affordable energy to the region. I have a lot of respect for the legislators that represent the area served by this project, but I don't think SB 32 meets the criteria of either wise or affordable. The costs are too high, social and environmental impacts to the park are too high, complications of private and federal lands that are required to complete the project are too extensive, and the opposition to the project is too widespread. I urge you to oppose SB 32, and thanks for the opportunity to provide testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Liedberg. Questions? Thanks for your testimony, sir. Next is Carrie E. Plyer from Dillingham. Carrie, if you can please state your name and affiliation, you have 3 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Carrie Plyer. I'm born and raised from Dillingham, Alaska. I'm here representing myself this morning. Consistent with the legislator's purpose for establishing the Woodtick State Park in 1978, the three primary management objectives of the Division of Parks would be to, one, protect and conserve the area's fish and wildlife populations and breeding systems, provide the continued use of the area for traditional substance and recreational purposes, and to protect the area's recreational and scenic resources. Allowing development and operation of a hydroelectric project in Chicoutimi Lake is in no way compatible with any of the three core management objectives of the park. In fact, it is contrary to all management objectives. Altering the water flow in the Allen River has the potential to affect the entire ecosystem downstream, including river and beach spawning areas used by thousands of sockeye salmon. The salmon of the Allen River and all areas downstream should be protected. Used for subsistence, commercial, and sport fishing, sockeye salmon are a vital component of the culture of the people of Bristol Bay. This dam has the potential to damage that which people of Bristol Bay rely on most for survival. Just because salmon have not yet made it into Chicoutimi Lake doesn't mean that they won't. This step in altering the legislative intent from 1978 will have far-reaching impacts to the people and the economy of this great state. Commercial fishing is the number one industry in Bristol Bay. Fishing equals survival here. Incrementally damaging our precious fisheries resource will not only potentially destroy the fishery, but the families who call Bristol Bay home. I will leave you with this quote I read in Hidden Alaska by Dave Acheson. As more of the world sinks beneath a veil of concrete and steel, doesn't our still intact ecosystems, those oases of solitude and sheer beauty, increase in pricelessness? The time has come to examine just what exactly progress is and ask ourselves, at what point do we lose more than we gain? If we destroy nature blindly, it is a boomerang which will be our undoing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Plyer. Any questions for Ms. Plyer? Thanks for your testimony. Listen only, Mr. Larson and Ms. Gomer, I believe. So the next to testify and the last I have on the list is Henry Wilson from Anchorage. Henry, if you can state your name and affiliation, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Henry Wilson, I'm representing myself. I'm a resident of Anchorage. I also own property in the Woodchuck area and spend a lot of time out there. I'm opposed to Senate Bill 32. While I can recognize and understand the need for affordable power, I do not believe that this proposed project is going to provide that. The proposed Chicoutimi Dam is not economically viable, and there are numerous technical and logistical problems associated with it. There's already evidence to suggest that it's not economically feasible. There was a report prepared that an earlier speaker alluded to. I think it was by the Association of Village Council Presidents or NuVista. It was engineering firm MHW, a final report dated March 2011. It did an economic analysis, looked at what the lowest or the net present value of the four dam alternatives and also a diesel fuel alternative. The conclusion was from the economic standpoint that the diesel-only alternative is the preferred choice. This is a quote from that report. In all three demand scenarios, the diesel-only future has the lowest NPV and from an economic viewpoint would be the preferred low-cost choice. So there just seems to be an assumption that that this will be cost-effective, but nobody's looking beneath the surface to see if that's really founded, and it's not. A speaker alluded to all the logistical problems of the transmission lines. This would have to go across the Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. There's no assurance that authority would be granted. Several speakers have alluded to the downstream impacts. I think that's a very important point. There are sockeye salmon that spawn in the Allen River. We've seen in the lower 48, there have been numerous instances where dams have adversely impacted salmon. In the Columbia River system, we have salmon that are on the endangered species list because of the impacts of the dams. It's not just the passage upstream, it's the effect on flow, the disruption of the ecosystem. So for all of these reasons, I'm opposed to the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson. Do we have anyone else on the list? No? We're not going to pass this out today. We're going to take public testimony on Tuesday, and I do understand that there are some amendments coming that may deal with some of these issues. So we will hold this bill over for further discussion on Tuesday, February 12th at 3:30. And unless there are other comments from committee members, we are adjourned. Let the record show that.
Pick a time.
It is 9:04 a.m. Thank you.